From NPR News, special coverage of today's terrorist attacks in New York City and in Washington, D.C. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams. We're joined now by Hassan Astana, a professor of structural engineering at the University of California in Berkeley. He joins us from San Francisco. Professor Astana, let's talk a bit about these 110-story twin World Trade Center towers collapsing, almost imploding. What do you see when you watch that videotape?
What I saw was what we call a classic case of progressive collapse. What happened here was not really a collapse of a structure due to impact of the plane. The plane hitting the structure, in fact, was no match to the strength and mass of this structure. The weight of plane and the structure of plane is very, very weak compared to the structure itself. So in this case, the plane must have disintegrated. But what happened was that plane was certainly containing large amount of jet fuel and perhaps explosives, we don't know. And that fuel being delivered to the structure caused the top 20 stories of this structure, in both cases almost, to catch fire and burn for about 1 hour or so. What happened then is that as the fire was going on, these are steel structures, and steel structure is very resilient against impact. So they did not collapse due to initial impact. But in this case, the fire went on, and steel is a material that when temperature goes up and it becomes hot, about 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit, then the steel loses its strength to carry the load. So what you had here was, it was very clear on the video that we saw this morning, it was very clear that the top 20 story was burning, and the columns at the bottom of those 20 stories, which is about 90th floor, those columns collapsed due to intense heat. And when that happened after 1 hour of initial impact, then the whole 20-story top portion of structure collapsed like a what we call rigid body, like a big box, I calculated, weighing about 40,000 tons, falling on the top of this 90-story building now that is underneath.
And that is the building underneath has probably been weakened by the aviation fuel that's been leaking down through the...
Perhaps. We couldn't see from my view when I was looking at the video. It was not clear if there was any damage actually to the lower floors. I couldn't see any even glass broken or any dust coming out of lower floors. It looked to me that lower floors were not impacted. And I heard from a colleague of mine that actually they had engineers at the 91st floor, and they were able actually to walk out and get out of the building before it collapsed. So it seems that the lower 90 stories did not have much damage, but the top 20 stories or so were burning. And when that 20-story mass collapsed on lower 90 stories, then of course that 90-story structure was not designed to take that kind of impact. And it was kind of like hammering on top of that building with that much weight, and it collapsed completely under gravity. So it is really a case of progressive collapse due to fire that went on for an hour or so, and it weakened the columns. And when the top portion collapsed, it collapsed on the lower part and collapsed the whole structure.
Professor Astana, thank you for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
Hassan Astani is a professor of structural engineering at the University of California in Berkeley. He spoke with us from San Francisco.
We're joined now by former Senator Warren Rudman, who co-chaired with former Senator Gary Hart the U.S. Commission on National Security in the 21st century, the Hart-Rudman Commission, which completed its final report just this year in March. Senator Rudman, your report predicted, essentially, that something like this could happen, and I believe you said in your report that the question was not if a terrorist attack on the United States could happen, but when.
That's right, and we talked about two kinds of attacks. We talked about weapons of mass destruction and weapons of mass disruption, which is what we saw today.
Did you have any sense of what kind of attack the United States could expect? This was not one of those sophisticated biological weapons attacks. It was not a It was not nuclear weapons. It was instead sort of combining two things that terrorists have done in the past, suicide bombing and airplane hijackings.
When you talk about mass disruption, you're talking about using anything that is an instrumentality of high explosives, whether it be a truck, a tanker, an airplane, delivered against a target occupied mainly by civilians.
Can you shed any light on why the United States was vulnerable to such an apparently sophisticated and coordinated attack that four different airplanes could be hijacked, sent after several targets, succeeding in three of them with apparently no warning from our intelligence services?
There are certain things which are very difficult to predict, and one of them is what terrorist organizations will do. It is one thing to have your intelligence apparatus focused on Iraq or China, but the bottom line is that these shadowy terrorist organizations, who are well-financed and very competent, given enough time with the people they have and the training they have, can carry off something like this as we saw today. So this really should not surprise anyone unless people have not been following what we know about these folks, which is quite a bit.
And do you think there's any reason to believe that the United States can protect itself against this kind of event in the future?
Well, the major recommendation we made was that this threat was the number one threat to this country, and we've laid out a whole list of things that have to be done. We believe strongly that all of the disparate government organizations that respond to this sort of event have to be coordinated. We have testified before the Congress as to the need for a Homeland Security Agency. We have talked about the need to change focus of U.S. intelligence. And having said all that, I'm not sure you can prevent all of it. You can prevent some of it, but certainly the response, if this is going to continue in America, and it well might over the years, this is not like a war where you have a winner or a loser. This can go on indefinitely until the terrorists decide to turn their attention somewhere else.
Is there anything that the United States can do in terms of retaliation that might stop or reduce the threat?
Whether it can or it can't, we will, I'm sure, retaliate if we know whom to retaliate against. One of the great difficulties right now, you know, everybody wants to point to a particular terrorist organization, and that may be right, but I would caution a little restraint on that until we have some information, and I'm sure that information will be forthcoming. But once we know that, yes, it's possible to retaliate, but you want to retaliate with the right amount of force against the right place.
Senator Redmond, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Former Senator Warren Redmond, he co-chaired with former Senator Gary Hart the U.S. Commission on National Security in the 21st Century, the Hart-Redmond Commission. We reached him here in Washington.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of today's terrorist attacks on U.S. targets. I'm Robert Siegel in New York.
In Washington, I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams. This has been a day of almost indescribable devastation, starting with the morning hijacking of two jets that were steered into two towers of the World Trade Center in New York. Those skyscrapers were totally destroyed by the attacks. No one can say how many hundreds or thousands of people may have died. Shortly afterwards, another hijacked plane crashed into the Pentagon in Northern Virginia. Both Washington and New York were nearly shut down by the terrorist assaults. Tonight, President Bush addressed the nation.
Today, our nation saw evil, the very worst of human nature. And we responded with the best of America, with the daring of our rescue workers, with the caring for strangers and neighbors who came to give blood and help in any way they could. Immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans. Our military is powerful, and it's prepared. Our emergency teams are working in New York City and Washington, D.C. to help with local rescue efforts. Our first priority is to get help to those who have been injured and to take every precaution to protect our citizens at home and around the world from further attacks.
President Bush speaking this evening from the White House.
We turn now to NPR's Melissa Block, who is about as close as you can get tonight to the World Trade Center. Melissa, where are you and what do you see?
I'm standing on the West Side Highway, which is just north of the World Trade Center. It's where the emergency services have set up their vehicles, and where they're, when there's call for them to go in, they're going in. I just saw a procession of earth-moving equipment and large cranes go in, about 3 bulldozers and 2 huge cranes. I've heard that they're going to start to try to start move some of the rubble in the vehicles from the area. There are a number of firefighters here who I've been talking to who are down there putting out fires. Described, you know, it's been a little confusing about what actually is left of the Trade Center towers. They were 110 stories tall, and they collapsed, obviously, this afternoon, earlier this morning. The firefighters who I spoke to who were on the scene said that they are now reduced to about 5 or 6 stories of rubble.
Certainly much smaller than what they were. There have been reports that that first wave of emergency workers that went into the World Trade Center, firefighters, police, that there could be hundreds of them lost now and unaccounted for. What do you hear about that?
That's right. I mean, that's the concern here, and those numbers we still do not know. I talked to a National Guard a member of the National Guard from Dover, New Jersey, who had gone in, sitting on the sidewalk, completely shaken. He said he'd never been in combat before, but this is about as close as he can imagine getting. He was down there trying to pick through the rubble to find any survivors. They did find some. This was early on today. People probably who had been outside the building. He was hearing cries for help. He described a woman whom they had found who was completely covered in blood. She did not remember her name. He said she was half naked, stripped of her clothes from the force of the blast. And you see just wave upon wave of firefighters. You might hear some applause right now. Those are Salvation Army volunteers who are applauding the firefighters who are trudging from the scene, caked in debris. Their heads are bowed. They're carrying axes and picks. This has obviously just been a tragic day for the New York City Fire Department and the Police Department.
Melissa, what is the air like there? Is there still that terrible cloud hanging over Lower Manhattan?
There is, all over the southern Manhattan. You just get the strong stench of acrid smoke that's everywhere. I mean, after the 2 main towers collapsed later in the afternoon, there was a collapse of another building at the Trade Center. There are also any number of smaller fires that the fire department has been putting out, cars that were set on fire, other buildings that have been set on fire down there. I mean, it wasn't just, obviously, the 2 towers, but surrounding buildings that were affected by this, and the whole area is just still thick with smoke.
The president's message earlier this evening was that America reopens for business tomorrow. It doesn't sound like the financial district reopens for business tomorrow.
No time soon. I mean, this is just I can't begin to describe, and obviously I haven't been there to be able to describe it, but the people who have been in there and are describing what they've seen said you would not recognize it. It just did not look anything like what the tip of Lower Manhattan used to look like.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks, Robert.
NPR's Melissa Block reporting from Lower Manhattan, from the West Side Highway, close to the World Trade Center.
Of the 4 planes hijacked today, 1 did not reach the hijackers' intended destination. United Airlines Flight 93 from Newark to San Francisco crashed outside Pittsburgh. There were 45 people on board when the jet slammed into a grassy field. NPR's John Itzde is about a quarter of a mile from the crash site in south-central Pennsylvania. It's about 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. John, I understand the FBI are there at the site now. What sort of work is going on tonight?
Well, tonight, you know, they're just gritting out the area, but not doing any real searching. The NTSB arrives tonight. Tomorrow morning, they'll go over the area very carefully, trying to find evidence and remains. Hopefully they'll find the flight data recorders and the flight voice recorders, and that they'll tell us something about what actually happened on Flight 93.
John, is there any area, this is an area of speculation, I know, but is there anyone talking about where this plane, where the hijackers could have been wanting to take this particular plane?
Well, there's speculation. Obviously, it wasn't in this field. There's certainly nothing of great symbolic importance there. It's not the heart of capitalism. It's not the headquarters of the U.S. military. There's some speculation that it might have been headed for Camp David. Some media, as I understand it, are reporting that the jet may have gone beyond this area into Cleveland airspace, then asked to be rerouted to Washington, and so maybe there was a target in Washington. We really don't know. There are also reports that there was a cell phone call from a lavatory on the airplane, and that the caller called 911 and said the plane had been hijacked. It wasn't a hoax. And then later said that there was a fire in the cockpit, and that the call ended abruptly. Now, I can't, The FBI confirms that there was a 911 call that they're very interested in. They've seized some tapes, 911 tapes, from a site in western Pennsylvania, but we can't confirm really the nature of that call.
That call came, you say, from a passenger.
Apparently, reportedly from a passenger. But again, the FBI isn't confirming anything. They're only saying they're aware of a 911 call, that tapes have been confiscated.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Noah.
NPR's John Itzde talking with us from central Pennsylvania.
As people across the country watched and heard news of today's events unfold, they called their neighbors and relatives, hoping no one they knew had been hurt, and trying to make sense of the incomprehensible. NPR's Lynn Neary reports.
The images took a moment to absorb. It was the World Trade Center, but what was happening to it? Why was smoke pouring out of it? How could two planes have hit it within such a short amount of time? Then, a sickening feeling as reality sunk in, and the terrible news kept coming. The Pentagon on fire, rumors that the White House had been struck, and the State Department. Government buildings all over Washington were being evacuated, and just outside, right in front of this building, the fear was palpable.
Get back!
Yes, get back!
Well, I think we'll take their advice. Let's get back.
A van without a driver was parked in the middle of the street. The police were checking it for explosives and cordoning off the street, only adding to the confusion as office workers emptied out of nearby government buildings and tried to find a way to get home. Cindy Cheeks works for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
They told us to leave now, and we don't have anywhere to go. That's why I'm standing here looking stupid.
Where are you supposed to go?
Husband. Home, Maryland. I can't get home. It's no metros running. It's no buses running. Look at all the congestion out here.
What's your reaction to all this, Cindy?
I'm scared. I'm frightened, really. It's horrible.
By noon, most public transportation was running, and a strange calm replaced the panic. A young woman named Becky took a cigarette break and contemplated the empty streets as the last workers left the building she managed.
It's very surreal around here, I think, right now. People are in shock. It's almost like an eerie sort of quiet, like it's too hard to believe that this is really happening.
Bob Sauerwein remembers what it was like on April 19, 1995, when a huge bomb exploded in his hometown. Sauerwein runs a small cafeteria near where the Alfred P. Murrah building once stood in Oklahoma City.
I was here during the bombing when the memorial was down there, and this building here shook as well. So I can imagine what them people in New York are going through right now. It just tears my heart out when things like this happen to our country.
At the Oklahoma City Memorial, Executive Director Carrie Watkins says the staff wanted to stay open all day, but few visitors came, and by afternoon she decided to close down for safety reasons. Just as they were 6 years ago, says Watkins, the reverberations from today's attack will be felt across the country.
It leaves people with the sense of uncertainty. It leaves people with the sense of pride for their country. And I think as Americans, we unite together and take a stand that we will not let terrorists defeat us. They'll hurt us. They'll break our hearts. They'll, you know, hurt ourselves, but they're not going to defeat us as a country.
As stunning a blow as the Oklahoma City bombing was, today's attacks on the nation's capital and the country's financial center seem to have a more devastating effect on the national psyche. Deborah Margulies heard the news in Philadelphia.
The whole world looks to New York, and in, 18 minutes, 20 minutes, half hour, they shut our country down. That, I think, is a little scary.
Brendan Olkus, a young DJ who works in a club in Philly, says his sense of the world will never be the same.
I'm 26 years old. I've lived pretty much my entire life in a relative state of peace. But I've always felt like, you know, I've always felt safe, and I don't know that I've ever felt really patriotic. I mean, I've just sort of felt like I've existed, and today was the first time I ever felt like, wow, like my homeland has been attacked.
Some sought refuge in prayer.
Let us pray, O God, giver of solace in the presence and hope for the future.
About a dozen people attended this prayer service at the Episcopal Cathedral of St. Mark in Salt Lake City, Utah. Michael Mitchell, a native of Utah, had just moved back after living in New York for 9 years.
I've been on the internet all day trying to be in touch with my friends, and she can't get through by phone. I've just been trying to be in touch with people and see if they're all right.
Now, says Mitchell, like most people, He's wondering about the U.S. response.
I'm scared now that we're going to retaliate in a way that's going to pull us into something much, much deeper. And that's something that really scares me. We then get in a state of, you know, retaliation, and it just escalates. As I was sitting here today during the prayer service, I was thinking, you know, how can we begin the forgiveness process right away and still grieve and still have, you know, that righteous anger and still try and set things right? But I don't know that that necessarily means that we, you know, bomb the hell out of whoever did it.
It will take a long time for the emotions of today to settle in, for people to fully absorb what happened. But in the minutes and hours after the attacks occurred, there was a sharp sense of violation and a keen sense of uncertainty about what lies ahead. Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.
This is special coverage from NPR News in Washington. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams. Frantic rescue efforts are underway tonight at the World Trade Center in New York City. Crews are inside the building searching for survivors trying to recover bodies. Kenny Johanneman is a janitor in the World Trade Center. He was in the basement this morning when he heard the first explosion. Mr. Johanneman, tell us what you heard. What happened?
Well, what happened was I was going up to the elevator, and all of a sudden we heard a boom, and the elevator doors flew open, and one of the delivery guys came out. He was burnt up, so when I went to retrieve him, his skin just came right off, and we escorted him out, and as soon as we escorted him out, we were there for a couple of minutes, and all of a sudden the second bomb flew, plane hit. And all of a sudden, we looked up and we saw people jumping out of the towers, the first tower.
When the elevator opened, you heard that explosion. You probably thought you saw that the man was on fire.
Well, no, I was thinking of the person. I'm friends with the woman that was running the elevator, and I don't know where she is right now.
Oh, I see. Now, I was going to suggest that you probably thought it was a small local fire.
He was yelling bomb.
Oh, he was?
Yes, he was yelling bomb, bomb, bomb. So when I grabbed him and he slid off me because of his skin was so burnt, I just got him out of there. I couldn't take any time to see if she was okay, which I'm worried about right now.
So you right away left the basement?
Yes, we proceeded to the supervisor's office. We all ran outside, and that's when the second plane hit.
And when did you start seeing bodies come from the building?
Well, when the second plane hit, about 2 minutes after that, that was when it hit the second building. The first building, we looked up and we saw bodies flying out of the, jumping out of the windows, and they were still alive because their arms were flailing and they were still appeared to be alive.
Were you concerned that you were perhaps too close to these buildings at that time?
No, I was worried about my coworkers. I was worried. We tried backtracking back in to go in to see if we could save anybody, and the police would not let us back in.
Now, you know the structure of those towers. Did you have any thought that one or the other might collapse?
No, I didn't. I thought it was structurally sound, but obviously it wasn't. But I was just, like I said, I was worried about my coworkers.
And then when the first tower goes down, what did you do?
Well, I ran around to see if I could see any ABM shirts, which is American Building Maintenance, to see if anybody was around, and I didn't see anybody, and that's when I got worried.
And where were you when the second one went down?
When the second one went down, that's when I was two blocks away, and that's when I started seeing people jump out of the buildings.
I see. Did you ever go much farther than two blocks away?
No, because the cops kept pushing us back. The police kept pushing us back because they were worried about our safety of the debris flying and stuff like that.
When you think back on it now, Mr. Johanneman, does it seem real to you? Does today seem like it was a real day?
Well, now it hit me because my supervisors told me that five of my coworkers passed away, so I'm pretty shaken up right now. I'm containing myself right now on the phone, but I guess as soon as I get off this phone, I'll be blubbering pretty much.
Were you working there in the building at the time of the bombing in 1993?
Yes, I was. When the first bomb hit, I was down in the basement, which is one below the concourse.
So this is the second time. Had you ever thought it could happen again?
No, I didn't.
And what could the future be like for you now? What will you do?
I have no idea. All I'm worried about is the families that have people passed away. I'm worried about my coworkers. I want to see who's alive, what happened, and I'm very concerned about the people that were in there.
Maybe there's a chance you could go down and help out tomorrow.
Yes, I would definitely do that.
Mr. Johanneman, thank you for talking with us, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Here's a recap of today's story. The worst terrorist strike ever was carried out this morning. The headquarters of the U.S. military came under direct attack. A commercial jetliner, American Airlines Flight 77, was hijacked and crashed into the side of the Pentagon.
About the same time, two other planes were hijacked, American Airlines Flight 11, United Airlines Flight 175. Those planes were flown directly into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York City. A fourth airplane, United Airlines Flight 93, was hijacked and crashed 80 miles outside of Pittsburgh. The passengers and crew on board all four planes, some 260 people, are believed dead.
Passengers on hijacked planes called out on cell phones, telling 911 operators and family members that the hijackers pulled knives on passengers and crew members. In some cases, the callers reported that flight attendants were stabbed. In New York, the destruction was overwhelming. The crash and fire completely destroyed the 110-story skyscrapers. This afternoon, a third building in the World Trade Center collapsed. In places, the streets around the center were buried under 2 feet of ashes. There are no casualty figures yet, but New York fire officials say they fear that 200 firefighters may have been killed. Police say thousands more are dead or injured. Search and rescue efforts are continuing.
In response to the attack, all commercial air traffic was stopped today throughout the country. In Washington, the White House and the Capitol were evacuated. Public buildings and government offices around the country were closed in fear of more attacks. The financial markets were closed today and will be closed tomorrow. President Bush gave an address from the Oval Office this evening. He said that federal law enforcement agents are investigating the attack. One focus is Logan Airport in Boston. Two of the hijacked flights originated there.